Yeah, so my name is Günter Leschner. Hello to my talk. I will talk a little bit about cluster improvements in Samba 4. It was initially planned to have a bit more results to present from last year's talk where we did something similar. But as you all know, there were all kinds of other interesting things going on in Samba Land that caused us not to be so successful as we thought. So first of all, we at Red Hat, we really employ quite a bunch of Samba developers, all active in different teams internally, some in the identity team, where I was also a member of, now in the storage team. So if you look at the overall amount of commits that we as Red Hat contribute, so there's really a good impact on us, of us on the Samba code base. I am with the Samba team for quite a while now. Right now I am in the Red Hat cluster storage team, and we are working on clustering features, SMB on top of cluster, as the name already implies. So this talk is about clustering improvements in Samba. First of all, I want to quickly go a little bit, I want to give a little bit an overview of differences of clustering in the Samba world, built up on top of Samba and CTDB, and compare it with clusters in the Windows world. Then I want to share some thoughts of on the cluster improvements that came with the SMB3 protocol with Windows 2012. They were quite manifold. And then I want to go a little bit more into detail into two implementations that we have been working on in the past year. The one is the Witness service, a service for doing SMB transparent client failover, has been mentioned in quite some other talks here at the conference already. And I also want to give a brief update on our research work and also early implementation of the cluster management interface that I basically did mostly last week. And then of course, questions. So if you want to ask questions about clustering in general, I'm not at all an expert in all the aspects of clustering. Clustering is really very complex. Area. I really look at clustering really from a very high level management perspective, from a DCRPC implementer point of view. So I guess there are many other people in the room that can give much better answers to these kind of questions. In particular, also the very deep details of Windows clustering, like the entire setup of shared storage options, cluster shared volumes, and so forth. I'm not at all an expert, so please be. Look for other information somewhere. So what is clustering when we talk about Samba and CTDB? So yeah, no surprise, it's a grouping of multiple, usually identically configured and set up servers, they're called nodes, and they share some state information, notably the database information, so they have an on-record replication, and they have typically an identical configuration on all the nodes. So then cluster nodes themselves are not whatever domain controllers or standalone machines, but typically they are a member of an Active Directory environment. They have the role of a domain member. That means that in Samba and CTDB, every node will share the same machine account information with all the other nodes in the cluster. So you would only have one machine account, one SAM account name, one NetBIOS name, and one password. And there's no distinction between the node perspective and the cluster perspective. It's just once you group them together with CTDB, they just became one and they share all these security sensitive information. That's really important to point out because it's really a very, very big difference to the clustering on Windows. Yeah, then typically it's not only domain membership, of course, also shared databases, and then clients access a cluster via public IP addresses that can, whatever, be hosted on individual nodes. That's really up to configuration, basically. The management of such a server is done via two ways. There's first of all a CLI interface, the CTDB client utility, that offers really a broad range of subcommands to do all kind of modifications, either on a local node or on a remote node. So it's fully capable to talk to do remote management. Then also there is a messaging infrastructure where it is possible to use all the tools that Samba offers that deal with messaging, for example, the SMB control client utility, to send particular messages to particular cluster nodes for some management activity. So that's more kind of an infrastructure. It's not really used very widely, but will be used or demonstrated then later on for the implementation of the witness protocol. If we compare this setup with Windows, a lot of things really look the same. Of course, it's also a grouping of individual nodes under a broader scope cluster. But you see already here, each node is really keeping its completely independent machine account. And the cluster role that is established in this Windows cluster is really more kind of a virtual server with its own DNS name, its own IP addresses, its own machine accounts, its own service principal names in the AD and so forth. And it will completely behave differently when contacted via one of the virtual IP addresses that the cluster hosts than if the individual node that is currently hosting that server role is contacted. So that's a big difference and also something which has turned out to be a bit problematic for implementing some of these services which are related to cluster semantics. The management of a Windows cluster is first of all done with a very nice management user interface, a graphical user interface, the so-called failover cluster manager. And in addition to that, there's a whole bunch of PowerShell commands, I think almost 100 different of these, that really allow to do full remote management of cluster, including setup of addition of new nodes and modifications of storage and that kind of stuff. So it's a very powerful interface, fully scriptable and fully remote capable. So a very nice API. Then in Windows, you also have a distinction between two different models of clusters. You have the classic failover cluster, which is a typically active-passive setup. That means that all the nodes, they run the cluster together, but typically the file server, for example, and we mostly refer to file serving here in that cluster, is only available on one node. So one node is currently in charge of providing file services, and the role of the failover cluster is really to monitor the availability of that node, and if something goes wrong, to move that role to another node in the cluster and to provide file services from there. So this is the very old model of failover clustering that has been in Windows for quite a while, that also is providing services not only for file serving, but also for many other applications. So a very new addition came with SMB3 in the year the release of Windows 2012, are scale-out clusters. And scale-out clusters really provide an active-active setup. That means that clients can access the data or the file services, the file shares, on every particular node and operate on these. And it's just a matter of adding additional nodes to really make that cluster scale out and to provide services for more and more clients. So along with this scale-out cluster came some additional concepts. We've heard about most of these already here at the conference to really improve accessibility. For example, the SMB multi-channel. There was a talk of Michael yesterday about the current implementation of multi-channel in Samba. So that's a key component. Then there's SMB Direct, which is SMB over RDMA, where there is currently not an ongoing implementation intent inside of Samba. And there is the SMB transparent failover, the so-called witness interface, which I'm now going to talk a little bit more in detail. So what is the witness interface? It's really a DC-RPC service, provided as so many other DC-RPC services, and its main purpose is really to monitor the availability of an existing SMB3 connection and to inform connected clients that something is going wrong with that connection and that they need to reestablish or reconnect another node in the cluster. So it's really an interface to provide prompt and explicit notifications about the availability inside of the cluster. And it also has some requirements, for example, for persistent handles, so that when the witness interface is used to redirect the client to another node, that the client can continuously operate on the data and expect no interrupt whatsoever of the application that is using the file server. Right. I talked about this last year already, but nonetheless, I think it makes sense to quickly go over the older ways of doing client failover and older SMB protocols to really understand where and how the witness interface is really implemented in a cluster. So an older release of the protocol, the failover was initiated from the client. So the client was trying to access data or to continuously access the data on the server, noticing that there was a problem and needed to reestablish a connection to another node in the cluster. So you would have the client here on the left, and then you have a typically, let's say, a Windows cluster running, for example, SMB1 or SMB2 with three particular nodes. So currently the server is accessing node 1, for example, for SMB services. There's a problem on node 1. It takes a time, and actually the client needs to run into a timeout until the client notices the unavailability of the node 1, and the client is then choosing another node in order to continue with the operation. So it's all client-driven, and it's relying basically on timeouts, which of course is a very unpredictable and very error-prone setup. So if you look how clusters with CTDB and Samba were dealing with client failover, CTDB was actually was providing a technology or a concept that made client failover a much more smooth thing. So if you have been to Martin Stork just recently, he explained the inner workings of the so-called TCL-ACK implementation, which is basically a mechanism to force clients to reconnect to another node in the cluster. And that's an event that is driven by the server and not relying on the client behavior. So if you look at the classic, a typical Samba cluster with CTDB in the picture, you will have the client again on the left side. And then you have, again, three nodes. And on each node, you have the SMB server, SMBD process in that case, and then, of course, also the CTDB process. And all these CTDB nodes, they communicate between each other, so they are aware of the state of the cluster at any time. Now, when one node is getting trouble, like for example node 1 again, CTDB is aware of a failure. It will probably move the IP address to another node, in that case, for example, the node 2. And the node 2 will then issue the TCL-ACK mechanism, forcing the client to connecting back to itself. So in that case, the failover is not relying on the client behavior running into a timeout, but the server can really actively drive the process that clients reconnect to another node in the cluster. So, of course, as I said, SMB3 brings a lot of improvements for clustering. And with the witness interface, they really have now the ability to do something similar like CTDB already did in the past. And actually, it's doing much more and much nicer. So this would be a setup with a client, again, and with a Windows SMB3 cluster. That would be Windows cluster. So you have three nodes again, three SMB3 servers, and then you have, apart from them, also a witness server, which is really has to be considered as an independent component of the SMB server. So what happens? The client establishes access to the cluster. It chooses node 1 to do SMB operations, and at the same time, it also contacts the witness server running on node 1 to get a list of the interfaces available in the cluster. So that makes the client aware of the IP topology of the cluster, of all the nodes, of their configurations, and in particular, whether these nodes are good candidates for witnessing the existing SMB connection between the client and node 1. And this it's pointed out with the star here. So that means the client now has a list of all the nodes in the cluster, and the client will then choose one other node, and it won't be node 1, to register for notifications if something goes wrong with the SMB connection to node 1. So it registers for notifications and it sends an async notify request. that basically says, tell me if anything goes wrong with node 1. I want to be informed immediately. And it's node 2 is really in charge of getting back to the client and telling it that. So if now something goes wrong with the SMB server on node 1, node 2 will send the async notify reply, and then the client will choose another node to continue the SMB operations. In that case, it has chosen node number 3. And yeah, so that's a way to do the client failover with SMB3. Also, something where the client and the server both play an important role. So it's not only server-driven, it's not only client-driven, but it's a concept that's really greatly improves the robustness and the availability of SMB services in a cluster. If you look at the protocol, what's actually required to let a Windows client try the witness service to establish all this mechanism, all this machinery, there are some tree connect flags at the SMB level. It's the capability cluster, and then for Windows 10 clients, it's also the continuous availability capability. Both need to be set so that the Windows 10 client will actually establish this witness machinery against a Samba server, which we'll now see now. So we basically announced this cluster with a parametric option right now in our proof of concept implementation. This will most probably be different configuration parameters once we got a real implementation. Just very briefly, over the witness interface itself. So as you've already seen in the other slides, it's only consisting of very few calls. There's this interface call, a register call, async notify call, and that's it. There are two different versions. That the second version brought some small improvements over the first one. We talked about this, so we don't have to need to go into too much detail. Here you see a witness interface definition. Like you have a group name, which would be then my cluster name. You have IP addresses in there. You have a flex field, which basically points out whether the IP address is valid. And then in particular, the witness info flag, if that is set, that actually points out that this IP address here, the 108, is a good candidate for witness registrations in that cluster. Yeah, this is how the register X call looks like. You will see it has gives a net name. That would be the name of the cluster. It allows also to register for any activities with a particular share. That's a new edition of the version 2 protocol of the witness interface. It gives the IP address that you want to have monitored, and of course the client computer name, so that the server can keep track of what clients connected to him. Then a couple of the flex field and timeout setting. We don't need to go into great detail with that. Async notify, that's really the core call that has to deal with sending back the replies back to the client. And as the name already implies, it's really meant to run asynchronously, which means the client will send a request to the server and is not expecting a reply immediately, but it could theoretically really take a very, very long time until the server decides to send back a reply to that call. This has been a bit of a problem for our implementation, as we will see soon. The payload of that asynchronous notify call then can carry a specific set of information. It can inform the client that the cluster itself has gone down completely, for example. So that would be expressed via a witness notify resource change message. The server can also tell the client to move to a particular node to really reroute the client to some other node. I will demonstrate that later on. It can also point out that a share has been relocated in a cluster with the share move payload, and that an additional IP address has been added to the cluster. So that makes the client aware of probably additional nodes in the cluster that have come up, or other related IP address changes. So what does one need to do? What is required to have in order to implement something like this witness interface in Samba? You need to have an endpoint mapper, because the protocol itself is not going over NAN pipes, over SMB, but it's using NCICN IP TCP transport, which of course in Samba we have, so that's not a big deal. The messages are always signed, I believe, so we need to support signing. Of course, we do that as well. But the big problem is really the asynchronous RPC server infrastructure, and that's turning out to be a requirement for more and more interfaces that we would like to implement in Samba. For example, the asynchronous printer protocol, PAR, something we haven't implemented yet because we don't have an asynchronous RPC server. Then the cluster management interface I'm going to talk about next, and of course the witness interface. They all rely on asynchronous semantics of the RPC server. Now, luckily, in Samba 4, we have an asynchronous RPC server, but if you install Samba 4 in your setup and you configure it and you start it, the Samba 4 RPC server is only used if you're running as a domain controller, which in a cluster, you typically don't cluster domain controllers. So you would have more kind of a classic file server role and not a domain controller role. So that is something that we actually then use for our implementation to demonstrate that that we understood how it's working and what we need to do, but it's not what we want to implement it long term. So we need to have an asynchronous RPC server infrastructure in Samba 3. There has been one created by David Disseldorp that's not fully to the extent how we would like to have it. So Metze was proposing a new DC RPC infrastructure quite some years ago already. He gave a talk about this at STC, I believe 2 or 3 years ago. But due to all these other things that happened in the meantime, we weren't able to really continue work on that. So that's the next big task. Right, as apart from the RPC server infrastructure, you also need to have implementation of the management service that gives important information for Kerberos authentication, in particular the principal name, to let the client understand what Kerberos tickets it needs to get in order to talk to particular roles in the cluster or to particular nodes. So, then, as pointed out in other slides already, the witness D process should most ideally be completely independent from this file server. It should not be started as a sub-process or fork child, but in an ideal world, it should be really completely independent standalone binary, so that if something goes wrong with the SMB server or the witness D server, there's no interference between the two. And of course, we also need to have a very tight integration into CTDB, because CTDB right now is really aware of all the state information in the cluster. It knows how to inform other nodes of particular action to take and so forth. And it has also the TickleX implementation, which we of course still need in order to inform clients which are not using SMB3, but which are just older clients and that need to get failed over as well. And we of course want to continue to use that infrastructure. Then, of course, CTDB can whatever would be able to nicely interoperate with the list of connected clients, and then just trigger notify messages for using the witness protocol in the same way like it currently would with the TickleX mechanism. So there was a very early proof of concept implementation by Gregor Beck and Stefan a couple of years ago that we actually used to continue our work on. In the meantime, we have a Wireshark dissector for the witness protocol pushed to upstream, so that was not a big deal. We have, of course, the full IDL. We have a torture test suite. We actually already did some testing last year at the Microsoft Interop event, so we learned some interesting stuff there as well. And we actually said that this is one of the services on our roadmap that we really want to have for Samba 4.4 or 4.5. Unfortunately, due to the badlock issue and the completion of multi-channel, it has been postponed for now. So nonetheless, yes, last year, just around the STC conference, I was working on that together with Jose. Where is Jose? They're hiding over there. So we both sat together and made some plans and started to do a lot of testing and came up with this implementation based on Samba 4. As I said, we can't just let it run like that because Samba 4 RPC services are not meant to be run on a domain member. And of course, Samba 4 is not CTDB aware, giving all kind of problems when you want to access shared cryptographic information from the secret CDB in a cluster and these sorts of questions. So really a lot of problems, and we need to overcome that, and the only real solution to that is to basically finish on the new DC-RPC infrastructure. Right. At the same time, we also prepared to come up with an administrative tool for the witness interface. Like in Windows, you have different ways to control the behavior of a witness client. You can get information about connected witness registrations on the client, but you could also have a tool, again, a PowerShell commandlet, move SMB witness client is its name, to, for example, move connected clients to another node. And you would call that on a server in order to move clients away from your node if you want to take out a node for maintenance purposes or something like that. So we need to have something like this as well. And for the time being, we just use the cluster-aware messaging subsystem that we have that allows us to really talk to the witness daemon as an external process, just with this utility, and let it trigger specific things like change the state of the cluster, move clients to another node or something like that. This was one way of allowing modifications of the witness infrastructure. We also added a direct link between the incoming notifications that we would receive from CTDB and just forward this to the witness daemon. So that we have all kind of options just in case the role of the resource control management of CTDB would be taken out of the picture. We still then have these hooks to directly call an utility like SMB control in order to do modifications. Then, of course, we have not only the server side to implement, but we also want to look at the client. And Steve already pointed this out in his talk just before lunch break, that there's, of course, a big interest from the SysKernel module, for example, to use the witness interface to already get notifications once there are upcoming issues with an existing SMB connection. And most probably, the kernel does not like to have a synchronous client RPC runtime linked in, so quite likely it would make sense to call out from the Linux kernel to a client daemon, which would be running in user space, that would deal with these things. The witness client is asynchronous, and as we already tested with SMB Torture, so it would not be a big deal to come up with something like that. It's really just a matter of doing. I think the lowest hanging fruit would be a witness client engine for the SMB client binary, and once we find time, we hopefully are able to work on that. So, now lots of talking, we also can demonstrate that. And as I'm not insane, I prepared the demo so that I can just nicely relax and show. So I have a Windows 10 client here, which is a member of an AD domain. I just log in. And I just go to my pre-configured Samba CTDB cluster, just open up the file explorer. Go to Samba cluster, that's the name of the cluster. And I see there's one share, the cluster share. So then I have three pre-opened putty windows, each one logging in into the particular cluster nodes. And I just run some SMB status, CTDB status output so that you can see who's connected where. You see the 0: process ID of the cluster share, that gives you an indication that currently the client is connected to node 0, which is here in that window, the 1.1.14 IP address. And that information looks the same on all the nodes. Here I am on node 1, 115, and this is node 2 with the IP address of 116. So the client is currently connected to node 0. So now I open the share, I just do some operations, I create a directory, I create a file, just to show that's whatever, not fake or something. So the client is still connected to node 0, of course. When the client is connected to that node, that also means that the client must have gone to that node in order to get the list of the cluster topology, to get the list of all the available interfaces. which I can only demonstrate by really looking to the log file because it's nicely printed out there. So here you see a list of the witness interfaces in the cluster. It has three entries because I have a three-node cluster. And the entries look quite similar. This is the 114 IP address. That's actually the node that we are currently running on. And you see that the bit for being a good candidate for witnessing is not set on that node, so that the client knows I'm not supposed to talk to that node in order to do witness registrations. That particular bit is set, of course, on all the other nodes, as you can see.
But more accurately, you don't want to use the same node to serve files and witness.
Yep, yeah.
Right? Because you want a different node to witness.
Exactly, yeah. Right, so let's just continue showing the status output there. So actually I did some pre-guessing where the client went to for registration. It was node 3. It was a 50-50 chance. Again, it's most convenient to just go to the log file and see how the client connected to that node. So we're looking for the witness register call that would tell us that the client went to this host in order to register for notifications. I need to scroll up a little. Yeah, there it is. Witness register X. Yeah, it's hard to read. I'm sorry that the size is so small. It's giving Samba cluster as the net name. It's giving 114 as the IP address and then the Windows 10 client computer name. So it has registered and it asked for asynchronous notifications. So it has sent the request to our server. We see it's coming in. We find the appropriate registration and we do not send back a reply. We just wait. And this time we wait for 120 seconds maximum because the client has given that as a timeout. So it wants to be informed about something in 120 seconds. So what I now do is on that node 3, I kind of simulate an outage or something like that. I do call my client utility, the WitnessD, witness notify client tool that has this change command, the move command, share move, IP notify and get state. And I just move away that client that is currently connected to node, to the node on the left, on the very, so the client is connected here, witness registration here. If you look there, you see again, the client is connected on node 0. If I issue now this command on node 3 and tell him to move to another IP address, in that case, I see that the client has moved to node 2. So it's probably hard to read, but the indication of the node ID is in front of the process ID. So I can just whatever continue this as long as I want, and the permanently will just promptly and immediately connect to all the other nodes. And as you see in the above window, there's no interference whatsoever right now. Of course, I'm not doing some active operations on that, but just think for just demonstrating that we can shuffle around the client to whatever nodes we like immediately and promptly. It's really a very nice and easy thing. So I move again, this time to the node in the middle, and I move back to 116. So I can do with the client what I want, basically, and the client is not getting into trouble. Yeah, and I've moved it back to the initial node 0. So the SMB connection is now again at the on that node here. Right. So this is that. So we have this prototype kind of implementation that we need to finish working on. We also had really a hard time to find ways to automatically test that interface because in such a complex environment with multiple nodes in a cluster, you need to find a way to really programmatically let the nodes behave in a way that you know what to expect. So it's very hard to simulate a node failure without really destroying something. So you need to find a way to really programmatically simulate a node failure or something. And we could have used CTDB technology directly for that, but of course, we really wanted to first understand how the Windows server behave. So we came across this failover cluster interface, remote cluster management interface, sorry, class API, which is really a comprehensive interface to modify all kind of stuff in a cluster used by Microsoft Failover Cluster Manager in order to set up clusters and to modify clusters and these sorts of things. And we looked into the documentation. It's really over 600 pages spec. It's really a massive amount of information. And in the older versions, it was only available over a transport that we don't even support, the NCAC and UDP. So only with version 3, there's a chance that we can actually talk to that infrastructure at all. So what we did is, we created an IDL file, pretty much based on the one that Microsoft provides. And we started with a torture test suite to really understand a bit better the workings of that. And out of the IDL file, we can just with one command automatically generate a Wireshark dissector, which is finally now complete. And I think I will commit that very soon so that it's also available upstream. That allows us to really understand how this management utility really talks to individual cluster nodes and what it's doing, and to read about these contents. The architecture of that interface is really manifold. It's categorizing all kind of cluster objects into nodes, resources, resource types, groups, which are again grouping of these other things, networks, interfaces, and of course also the registry. The registry plays again an infamous role here, which is also a bit different for our implementation. Then, for example, if you look at the object of cluster nodes on that interface, you have calls for get the node state, pause a node, resume a node, stop a node, start a node, open node, close node, and so forth. And for all the mechanisms that they haven't yet thought about, they have this node control, which is yet again a way to really send another easy extendable list of additional operations, both get and set operations, to do all kind of things with a node in the cluster. The payload that these node control then carries is very close to registry-like property list syntax, which we also luckily were able to create a marshalling and unmarshalling function based on PIDL, so that we can easily read these streams of content on the wire from when Windows clients talk to Windows admin utility talks to a Windows cluster. Apart from the utility that I already mentioned, the failover cluster manager, there are this huge amount of PowerShell commands. I already mentioned that briefly. There are almost 101 of them. This is how the cluster manager itself looks like. So you have on the right, you have a list of roles, you have a list of nodes, and then storage disks, IP address, and all these things. And then here on the right side, you have a lot of operations that you can do with it, with these particular objects in the cluster. So we're wondering, okay, this is really interesting and really a well-working and very powerful tool. Can't we actually also implement that in Samba? And we said, okay, we looked at traces, or I looked at traces, and I said, it's doing some weird stuff with DCOM. It's trying to contact Oxid Resolver, and I have no idea where to really go from there on. And actually, it turned out last week that I was just blocking the first port of the endpoint mapper, 1024. So it was then using the Oxid Resolver to order to verify if the service was running with one of these server active calls. And once I opened the firewall port, this of course no longer is a requirement, and it's not using DCOM. It's really just talking plain DC-RPC. And there are some implementation difficulties nonetheless. First of all, there's this large problem of cluster name and node names differentiation in Windows, which we don't have with Samba and CTDB, because we only have one name shared among all the nodes in the entire cluster. And if you just pretend to do the same thing in that interface, all the utilities, they will just freak out, because they really expect the cluster name to be something completely independent and something represented in Active Directory as its own security identity. Then also, again, requirement for asynchronous DC-RPC on the server side, so a bit of the same problem like with Witness. And it's really using massively the Windows registry. Dealing with a very private Windows registry content in a lot of calls. And if you just ignore this layout of registry content being transported between all these calls and do something slightly different, then again, the client utilities just freak out because they don't expect any differences in there. If you pretend to be a Samba cluster node in such a setup, a Windows cluster node in such a setup, you also really need to deliver exactly the same view on the registry and so forth, because there are a huge amount of calls that will expose the semantics of the Windows registry directly on that protocol. So it's really very tightly integrated into that. So the entire cluster state is represented. Yeah, yeah. It reminded me a lot of that interface as well. Yeah. It doesn't send so many nulls, though. It's different. So this is a view of the registry of a Windows cluster. The entire cluster state is represented in that registry. So long story short, we have a very basic implementation of that interface right now in Samba, which I would like to quickly demonstrate. We still have a couple of minutes. So we can, of course, do all these very complex things, but we can, for example, start the failover cluster manager. So I'm here on a Windows 2012 box. I just go to the administrative tools, go to the failover cluster manager. So there it is. I say connect to cluster, I give the name of my cluster name, Samba cluster in that case. It takes a while because it's actually also trying to do some cluster API calls which are not documented with a very high opcode number. So we just found out this yesterday when looking at this with Amitai. And we are not replying to that for that reason. It's probably delayed a little bit. So here you see a view of our Samba CDDB cluster with the Windows Failover Cluster Manager. We see that the current host server is the CDDB node 2. Here we have the list of our CDDB nodes in our cluster. Status is always up. And just for demonstration purposes, we implemented some of these node management capabilities. So for example, I SSH again from my Windows machine to one of these CDDB nodes. Just pick anyone. Yeah. Okay, it's already open. For some reason, the window is not in front. Yeah, there it is. Actually, all these CDDB nodes I did set up with Vagrant, so I'm logging in as the user Vagrant. I sudo, and I watch the CDDB status. So all the nodes are okay. I'm currently logged in into node 1. And now I can do right-click on one of these nodes and whatever pause that node. Now I need to press actually F5 in order to refresh because I don't have an asynchronous RPC server implementation. So you see in the window below, it has stopped the node 0. It's now reporting inactive. And also the failover cluster manager tells me the CDDB node is now paused. If I would try to the node that I'm currently connected to and pausing that, it will not display the possibility to do that. Now let's resume the node 0. So start it up again. You see in the window below, it has switched from stopped to OK. I press F5, and also then the failover cluster manager UI will show me that the node is up again. So this is really just a very simple task, nothing very fancy, but just getting there really involved to implement a lot of cluster API management interface and a lot of very difficult details. Oops, this is the spec, sorry. Right, so yeah, actually just reached the end of my talk, so there are some good documentation, of course, about that protocol. There are many very good TechNet articles that explain in more deeper depth some of these workings and the details of Windows clustering. So there are some work in progress Git branches, all hosted on git.samba.org, where I can see the work like that, in particular the Wireshark dissector for the cluster API management, and also the proof of concept implementations for the cluster API management interface and for Witness. And yeah, so we hope that at least for Witness, we can soon really finish the work on that and provide this as a stable feature once we got the asynchronous RPC server. With the cluster API management interface, this is of course something nice to have, but there's no real strict requirement to have this, and there's also no strict protocol dependency from other important aspects of SMB3 that we need to fulfill. But nonetheless, it's really, once one has started on that, it's just so tempting to finish and have a full implementation of that. Right, so thanks for your attention.
Any questions?
Okay.
I have one comment and one question. Kudos to you for implementing MSCMRP in any form. I think you're the only consumer of that document anywhere in the
okay.
world. But question, early on, you pointed out that Windows clients won't connect Witness to, won't witness a server that's not CA. And that's important because they need the CA function to be able to flop transparently between the various nodes. They're going to break their session and reestablish it on another one. So it needs persistent handles, but I thought you didn't have persistent handles. So what are you doing about that?
Yeah, that's actually, I think I pointed it out somewhere in my slides. Of course, just pretending that we are able to have the CA flag does not make us having support for persistent handles. So that's on our list to do, as I'm understood. It's not such a long story to really have it implemented, given that we have the durable handle implementation. I guess that Michael will have much more details on that. So we could and should, of course, really actively start working on that. But currently, we just don't. So
they're just faked out, basically, using the durable.
Right.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any further questions? Okay, seems to be not the case. So thank you, Gunter.
Okay.